Welcome to the Amherst Wesleyan Church Sermon Podcast. Today we're going to talk about another kind of difficult or tricky subject that many of us face especially in our society in North America today. And that's this idea that if you're going to be somebody that goes to church or believes in God, that what you do, basic standard operating procedure, is when you get to the door of the church, you take your brain out, set it at the door, and then you come in. Right? This is a heart thing. This is a spirit thing. Your brain doesn't belong here. Check your brain at the door. Now, I don't know how many of you actually believe that, but some of you have kind of felt that, I'm sure. And that if you haven't felt that kind of idea, then there are people around you who have led you to think that that's how it operates, right? You have interacted with people who go, oh, you're one of those church people? Well, you must not have a brain. Some of you have faced questions and you've looked at things and you've said, like, how does science and God go together? How does science and faith, how does that mix together? Do I have to believe in one and ignore the other? Some of you have interacted with family and friends and people at work who have those kind of assumptions and make those statements to you. Some people look at you and all of a sudden disqualify everything that you're thinking, everything that you're saying, everything that you're doing, because you're one of those church people and you must not be thinking straight. It's like having faith automatically makes your opinion not valuable because you must ignore science. And so you've also been in this pressure situation where it's like, well, if I want to be respected, then I need to go to the science thing, and I need to go to all the intellectual stuff and go to the evidence, and I have to lean into that and kind of check my faith, leave my faith at the door while I'm having these conversations and talking to these people and interacting in these ways and being in these situations at work. So what are we supposed to do with that? Is science and faith, are they these opposite kind of ideas that can't go together? Are they, you've got to make your choice? I'm not going to stand up here and say, you know what, these are the merits of faith, and you should just ignore science because faith is more valuable. Is that what we're supposed to do? I don't think it is. I think that if we actually take a look at faith and science, we're going to get a much better picture that provides something much better for us to operate in. But what you've got to do is you've got to actually look at it. So, let's dive into some stuff and we'll see where we land. So first up, what we have here, from my understanding, is this is... And I believe it's been colored so that you can see the different elements a little bit better. But what my understanding is this is an accurate picture of part of a cell. Now, back 50, 60 years ago, And earlier than that, the understanding of the cell was much simpler. We thought that a cell was just basically a glob of flesh that somehow made up the entire organism, entire person. And we really didn't understand how complex the cell was. So that isn't a whole bunch of cells. Those are all the parts inside of a single cell. Where you have different mechanisms, mechanical operations, you have different chemical processing plants, you have different chemicals floating around, and different elements inside of your cell organizing the operation, handling the DNA, handling how your body processes chemicals, reproduces chemicals, how your body protects certain chemicals from entering the cell and leaving the cell, what chemicals you're going to process. All of that stuff is going on inside this single cell. And it's incredibly, incredibly complex. So complex that it looks like somebody built factories and built doorways and built buildings inside of the cell. And so what we see when we look at something as simple as a single cell, which our bodies are made up of millions and millions of them, is we see incredible complexity. Not something as simple as, well, you take one protein and you take another protein, you put them together and all of a sudden you have a cell and then you can have a reproducing organism. The reality is that the smaller you go, the more complex the organism becomes. The next picture here is the human eye. And we know that we all have eyeballs, and for most of us, they work. Now, if you're a man and you're looking for ketchup in the fridge, you know that somehow, mysteriously, your eyes stop working. Amen? Right? Right? You're looking for that thing that you put down, and it's right in front of you, but you can't see it, right? And that's why you go, hey, Heidi, where's this thing? And she goes, here. Right? Anybody had that experience when your eyes just stop working? Okay. You're not supposed to raise his hands. Goodness gracious. But for the most part, the eye works. Light enters. It hits certain cells in the back of your eye, the rods and the cones. The light processes, travels to a nerve, and goes to your brain. The interesting thing about something like the eye is that if one part of the multiple step process breaks down, your eye stops working. If your lens is missing, your eye's not going to work right. If the rods and the cones aren't working, your eye's not going to work. If there isn't a nerve going to your brain, it's not going to work. If all the processes of being able to flip the image the right side up isn't working, your eye's not going to work. If your iris isn't working and it's not allowing the appropriate amount of light in, your eye's not going to work. And what we have is an example here of some biological component, and there are many, many examples of this, but the eye is one of these situations where we have a biological component of our bodies that is so incredibly complex that if you miss out on even one single piece, it no longer functions. And why that's important is because if we want to believe that something like sight happened in stages accidentally, it doesn't make any sense. Because in order for the eye to give any biological organism some sort of advantage, which is kind of the evolutionary perspective, it has to work. And if one part of it isn't there or isn't working, it developed a lens but no nerve, or it developed a nerve but no lens, it provides absolutely no benefit to the organism. And so this is something that's come to be acknowledged as irreducible complexity. And there are examples of even simpler versions of the eye that still have that irreducible complexity that show that it couldn't have come about in stages. The entire mechanism needed to be formed at once for it to work. So we have incredible complexity at a cellular level. We have incredible complexity in the mechanics of senses. And we see that it's almost like it was put together. That it didn't just fall into place, but that somebody organized it and designed it. Now, this next picture. What we have here is we have a picture of a fossil, and we see layers of rock. So when we look at this, where science would normally, some perspectives of science would say that fossils take millions and millions of years to form, and that the different layers of sedimentary rock take millions and millions of years to fall into place. You see all that take place, and so you have, if you look at the Grand Canyon, if you go to the next picture for the Grand Canyon, you see all those stripes in the rock. Everybody can see that? All those stripes in the rock, and those are different layers of sediment and different layers of different types of rock that have been built in there. The idea is that it would take millions and millions of years and lots of time for all those layers of rock to be laid down and compressed, and then there would be a different layer, and then a different layer, and a different layer. Now, if we go back to the picture of the tree, we see some of those layers, but then you see on the right there, you see a fossilized tree in the rock. Well, I don't know about you, but when I see a tree that falls down dead, one, it falls down. Two, it rots pretty quickly. And what we have here is we see a tree standing upright, fossilized through multiple layers of rock, which, with the common understanding, would say that actually that tree was standing there for millions of years and had millions of different years of different sediment laying on top of it while it's still standing upright, not falling over, and then it gets fossilized. But when we look at it, the science actually says, well, that can't be true because the tree must have been covered rapidly with different layers of sediment quickly before it had time to rot and before it had time to fall down, and then it got fossilized. And so when you go to the next picture and you see the Grand Canyon, then you see these different layers, and it would be understood, some would say, well, it took millions and millions of years for a little bit of water to break down that whole rock surface and that there's sediment there and all this stuff. But looking at the tree and looking at this, it actually makes a lot more sense scientifically that there is not a long time, but a lot of water and a lot of dirt moving around in a short period of time. And so the better theory, the better understanding of the situation is actually that in a short period of time, there was lots and lots of water moving, and that the different layers of rock and sediment got pushed in layer upon layer upon layer and upon layer, and then there was a lot of water that went down and eroded this canyon. And we see evidence of that actually in the Old Testament, where there's the statement about there being this massive flood in the earth that would move lots and lots of dirt and rock, create layers, and there would also be lots of water moving that would eat away at those layers. And when we look at the science of it, the science seems to say that actually it doesn't have to be lots of time. It could just be a big force. Now, if we go to the next picture, there's another aspect to science and faith that we need to consider. Those ones had to do with the fact that creation is complex and that it doesn't seem to be happening by random. The matters of the earth show that it doesn't necessarily have to be a huge amount of time being at random, but it could be intense forces. There's another aspect of mathematics that comes into this. And there was a guy many years ago who conducted an experiment where he had some monkeys pounding on typewriters. And he figured that if probability played out, then they should be able to write something interesting just by randomly pounding on these typewriters. And so they did that, and they discovered that the monkeys didn't even write a single word. And then they sat down and they did the math. So take a Shakespearean sonnet, which is about 488 characters long, okay? So we'll say 488 letters. Probability says that every one of those letters could be one of 26 characters, right? 26 letters in the alphabet. You're following with me? So the way the probability math works is to get an A is 1 out of 26, okay? To get AA would be 26 times 26. So every letter adds times by 26, okay? You're following? I know this is a little heady. Okay, go to the next slide there. 26 letters, so 28 possibilities, 488 times. Next slide. So that's 26 times 26 times 26. 26 times itself, 488 times. Next slide. Works out to be a 1 with 690 zeros after it. Do you have some concept of how big that number is? Well, here it is. Okay, the ones at the top left, and then those are all the zeros after it. So in order, the random chance of getting a Shakespearean sonnet, or really any particular phrase at random that is 488 characters long, is a 1 with 690 zeros after it. Now, that's a big number because a million, how many of you have $1 million? Darren, are you keeping track here? Nobody? Nobody? Nuts. $1 million is a lot of money, isn't it? That's one with six zeros. This is a one with 690 zeros. Okay? This is, okay, big number. Okay, let's go to the next slide. The number of particles in the universe, so not atoms, particles, so like neutrons, protons, electrons, okay? Those individual building blocks of an atom, because every atom is made up of a mixture of neutrons, protons, and electrons, little itty-bitty pieces. The number of neutrons, electrons, and protons in the universe is a 1 with 80 zeros, which is this number. That's how many particles there are in the entire universe. But it would take a 1 with 690 zeros in order to probability get a sentence. What does all that mean? When you look at DNA and when you look at how cells are built and all the components with cellular structure, you find out that each of those pieces is incredibly complex and has a sequence of proteins. And the math just works out to be closer to a 1 with 690 zeros after it, which is more than the particles in the universe. And so mathematically, thinking that randomly at some point in history, all these proteins or all these chemicals could line up and magically create a self-replicating peptide, and then it would do it again, and then it would do it again, and then it would randomly do it again, and then they would come together and they would start to form the different peptides and chemicals necessary to form the structures of a cell all randomly. Well, there aren't enough particles in the universe to justify those kinds of mathematical chances. Let's go to the next one. Eight universes isn't enough. It would be 1 with 610 zeros. Like, I can't even... It would take more universes than we can imagine to come up with that probability. Okay, next slide. Something else that we need to consider is you and I have probably heard about miracles. You ever heard of a miracle? And sometimes we think, you know what, miracles happen, but they only happen to certain people, and we feel like, well, if the right person was around that, they could probably explain that situation, right? Like, there's probably some part of your brain that looks at it and says, you know what, yes, that person had his sight restored, yes, that situation changed. Yes, their car started when it needed to. Yes, that guy's back got healed. Yes, the cancer went away. But there's probably some kind of scientific explanation for that, right? And if the right people were around it, they would be able to explain it. And we assume that miracles really only happen when people are unaware or that the right people aren't around it and maybe the professionals aren't around it, and that's when miracles happen. But there have been a couple guys, Craig Keener and Eric Metaxas, who have both written books, one called Miracles Today and the other one called Miracles, who have both written books about documented miracles, where they find doctors and they find people and they have documented the events, and where doctors and different scientists will actually attest to these were the scans, these were the situations, something happened, and all of a sudden we can't explain it, but now the cancer's gone, now the person can see, now the leg is healed, now the situation is different. And the idea that the miraculous things that go beyond what simply science or what normal, natural events can explain aren't just random mythology, but have actually been documented by people that know what they're talking about. And if you have questions about that, you feel free to look up both of those books and read those books, listen to those books, whatever you've got to do. But you can go and you can find these books and they will give you a list of documented miracles. Something else that I want you to consider when you look at science and you look at the question of faith is that, again, with the cell being organized and with irreducible complexity and the question of was it a lot of time and just random situations or was it something important, something organized, something big happening all at once, we also need to understand that when you look at the universe, the mathematics of the universe are incredibly fine-tuned. And that's a phrase that you can Google, fine-tuned universe, where you look at how things work at even a subatomic level, and you think about, okay, the attraction force between the neutrons, the protons, and electrons. Have I lost everybody? A little bit? Okay, so part of this is, like, the Earth has gravity, right? The Earth has gravity, and that keeps us to the ground. Well, if the Earth was bigger, the gravitational force of Earth would be bigger. Yes? If that were to happen, all those toxic particles that are higher up in the air would be right down close to the Earth and we would all die. Okay? If the Earth was smaller, the gravitational force of Earth would be less, and all those necessary particles like oxygen that we need to breathe and to exist, for life to exist, would all float up away from the Earth, and we wouldn't have anything to breathe down here. And the Earth just happens to be the right size for that. That's why you have planets like Mars and Mercury and Jupiter who can't sustain life because they don't have the right gravitational force, they aren't the right size to keep the right particles around. Did you know that if the nuclear force, the force between electrons, protons, and electrons were a little bit different, then you would simply have all the neutrons would attract all the electrons and you would never get hydrogen? Or you would only ever get hydrogen. And so our universe would be made up of only hydrogen atoms, or it would not be made up of any hydrogen atoms. And Have you guys ever heard of the Hindenburg? What is the Hindenburg famous for? Crashing. Exploding. Do you know why it exploded? Because it was full of hydrogen. Hydrogen is one of those key elements that make up stars. If you don't have hydrogen, you don't have stars. If you don't have stars, you don't have life. And so even if the force between the nuclear force was different or the gravitational force was different, we wouldn't have life. If the Earth was closer or further from the sun than we already fluctuate in our orbit around the sun, we would either freeze to death or burn to death. If the moon was a different size or a different distance, there would be no life because it wouldn't affect the oceans the way that it needs to. Plus, if we didn't have a moon, the right-sized moon in the right position around the Earth, we would have been wiped out by Bruce Willis's asteroid in Armageddon. You guys seen that movie? I know it's like 25 years old, but like there's an asteroid coming to Earth and they've got to fly up and destroy it. Come on, folks. You've seen that movie, right? You guys have cried with me. I mean, you've cried during that movie, right? No. You guys are heartless. Did you know that the moon, the way, the size of it and the way it orbits around the Earth and the gravity of it, it actually knocks out most of the asteroids that come towards Earth? They hit the moon instead. If we didn't have the moon, and it was in the right place, and the right size, we wouldn't have life. And so what we find is we have a fine-tuned universe. We have irreducible complexity. We have incredible design elements inside of our individual cells that we can see, and we look at the geology, and we look at the time frame, and we see that it can't just be a huge amount of time with random circumstances, but that it's actually bigger events, and that there seems to be some sort of organization and history to it, and that we can see that somebody actually put things in place. There's a passage in Romans, chapter 1, verse 20, where Paul says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." Let me say it again. Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. The reality is that when you can look at science and you can understand science and you see what science is actually saying, it tells us there is a God. When you don't try to make science say what you want to say and you actually let science speak for itself, it tells us there is a God. And Paul says in Romans that God has been obvious to everyone simply by looking at creation. What does that mean for us? That means those of you here who struggle with doubts, I get it. I get the skepticism, I get the doubts, I get the concerns, I get the frustration. You want to have something concrete. You want to have the absolute definitive answer. You're not sure how this works. There's all that pressure. I get that. But when you ask the hard questions, I believe that when you start digging for the answers, you will find that science actually speaks and it tells us there is a God, and that science and God can go together and are meant to go together, and that there are answers to the questions you have. And you're allowed to be skeptical, and you're allowed to doubt, but you got to do the work, seek it out, and I think you'll start to see more and more and more that God makes sense. And if you're here and you're struggling with family or friends or coworkers or whoever, and they seem to just attack you, or they seem to put you down, or you're wondering, how do I share my faith with them? The truth is, you're not going to be able to walk in without any idea of what science says and just talk to them. You may have to do your homework. You may have to do some research. You may have to look up some of this stuff and have some of this understanding and have some of these facts figured out. And you may have to do some work so that you can carry on that conversation. But if you do that, I think people will be more and more open to the idea that maybe science is bigger than what the public say it is. And that maybe God does fit into this. Maybe science fits in with God. And maybe instead of ignoring your faith, people will start to listen. Because I believe that when you let science speak, it tells us there is a God. The worship team's going to come up, and they're going to do one or two songs here as we wrap up here. And I want to encourage you that if you're here today and you're struggling with these doubts and you're struggling with, how does all this make sense? Put the work in. Start digging. These were just a few ideas, and I didn't give you a ton of detail. I know it kind of felt like it, but I didn't give you a ton of details. You should do the research. You should seek it out. Don't be afraid of those questions, and don't go with some just Facebook meme that you saw online that says, you know what, there's a cross out in the space, and so that means there's Jesus. No. Do the work. Actually look at the science, look at the studies, look at the information, figure it out. And I think you'll see that God is there. And I think when you do that work, you'll also be able to share your faith. Because when you dig into the science, you're actually showing aspects of God. Because God is obvious to us through what He has made. And when we let science speak for itself, it tells us there is a God.
Thanks for listening and being part of our church and joining us in this journey to become down-to-earth people following Jesus in down-to-earth ways.